Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, I'll just say your name and your role with the show.
My name is Austin Durant, and I play Harold Zeidler in Moulin Rouge, the musical.
Yes, Moulin Rouge, the musical. It's going to be at the Kennedy Center in the Opera House now through September 24th, so get your tickets now. Hey, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, of course, you play Harold Zeidler. As many people will remember, at least from the movie, it was, I guess, who was it? Jim Broadbent, you know, the owner of
That's
the
right.
Moulin Rouge. If you can, that guy, that's you, baby.
Exactly.
But I can't use that soundbite if I say it. So why don't I have you tee it up? Like, who's your character? You know, just say that you own the Moulin Rouge and give us the basic premise.
Sure. Harold Zeidler is the owner, impresario, ringmaster of the Moulin Rouge. He welcomes the audience to the evening, he's this larger than life personality. It's a lot of fun to play sort of a dream for a character actor like me, and you know, Jim Broadbent's performance in Moulin Rouge is one of those roles that has just lived rent free in my brain for years, and I've drawn on it for other characters that I've played and never thought that I'd actually get to, you know, play the man himself, but here I am.
Oh, it's got to be such a fun role. It's almost like getting to do the Joel Grey role in Cabaret or something. You know what I mean? Like, you get
exactly
to be the ringmaster, leader, almost narrator for the audience at some point. It's awesome. That's a lot about, you know, your character. But give us the, you know, the rest of the set the stage of, you know, what time period and you know, in France, Paris, you know, what time, set the stage where it is and who Christian and Satine is, like the basic setup.
Sure. Yeah. So we're in 1899 in Paris, and Moulin Rouge is a story about the star of the greatest nightclub in Paris at the time. Her name is Satine, and she is caught between the Duke of Monroth, who is this wealthy aristocrat who's promising to fund the Moulin Rouge in perpetuity in exchange for Satine's love. You know, and there are a lot of people underneath Satine, her sort of family at the Moulin Rouge are depending on her to save the club. It's kind of in dire straits. And then on the other side of the love triangle is Christian, this young idealist sort of bohemian songwriter who kind of represents Satine's last chance at true love. So it's a love triangle, basically.
Absolutely. And I want to get into all the musical numbers and all of that good stuff in a second, but I'm curious, when did you first, you know, I want to hear your memories of when you saw the movie, because this stage musical version, you know, is sort of an adaptation that, you know, Broadway and everyone, they did from the movie. It was based on the Baz Luhrmann 2001 movie, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you know, as a big movie buff and everything, you know, this was his, I guess it was sort of the third in his Red Curtain trilogy after Strictly Ballroom in 92, and then the Leo DiCaprio Romeo mm-hmm. and Juliet in 96. And so this one with Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor was just a massive phenomenon of, you know, how they just wove in all these pop culture references and all, you know, medleys of songs and stuff, the elephant medley and all, everything. But yeah, what was it like when you saw it? Were you kind of blown away by the way Baz kind of his style?
I had never seen anything like it before in my life. Just the way those like whip pans and cuts were happening, I just never seen a film move like that before. And that it just generates this sort of crazy frenetic energy that is it's absolutely intoxicating for me. It's like watching a live action cartoon in some respects. And that energy, I think, is an interesting challenge to translate onto the stage. But I think this production does it pretty well. I mean, for fans of the movie, all those numbers that they really loved are most of them are still there. And then there's going to be some updated music also. You know, people who aren't familiar with the piece at all are actually just totally surprised that they're coming in and hearing Beyonce and Sia and, you know, Whitney Houston, all this contemporary pop music that it really it's a surprise and a delight for a lot of people.
Yeah, remind us, let's do a deeper dive into the, you know, medley references and stuff. Like, you can't help but think of Ewan McGregor singing Elton John's Your yeah. song. And
that's still in there. Yeah, you can't have Moulin Rouge without your song.
And do you do the, you know, because, you know, Elton does it, you know, if they're green or they're blue. But, you know, Ewan was if they're green or they're blue. I can't sing. But is the Ewan arrangement in there?
I'm trying to remember how John Cardoza sings it.
Yeah,
he plays Christian in our production.
Nice. And then, of course, in addition to like all the fun medleys, there's songs that were originally written for the movie, too, like Come What May. Does that also make the stage version?
Yeah, Come What May is still in there. I think that's one of the only original songs from Moulin Rouge. I think there's an original song from the film that's not in the stage production, but Come What May is still in the stage production. Yeah.
And what makes that such a soaring romantic number for the characters?
It's their song that they write, that Christian writes for Satine. So in a way, it's their sort of romantic vow to each other. And I just remember that song. Moulin Rouge came out when I was in high school, and I remember that song. Everyone was singing that song at like every choir concert. Anytime anyone got to sing a solo or a duet, it was always Your Song. That song was kind of a phenomenon for a while, and it still holds up. It's a really beautiful ballad.
Yeah, the whole thing from start to finish, and we mentioned the can-can, like the whole thing is crazy. Well, talk about how you know the visual style too, because everyone knows. I mean, if you saw Elvis last year, you know Baz Luhrmann's, you know, cinematic style. It's all that flashy, like, and you mentioned earlier the cutting. You never seen a camera move that way. But on stage, is it still that rapid fire energy in the choreography and all, you know, and the set design and the visuals? Like, is it sensory overload on stage just like it was in the movie?
It sort of is. We get it. I mean, the set design is I think absolutely stunning, and the costumes are just this parade of color and texture, and they've really done an incredible job capturing that turn of the century fashion, sort of mixed with this kind of Alexander McQueen kind of high fashion look. It's really stunning in terms of the design, and then the lighting is I think what really ties everything together. It's like being at a rock concert sometimes. It's like the Pink Floyd laser light show at the Planetarium. It's like it's just nuts.
I love it. Yeah. And is there the other thing that we always remember from the movie was, you know, the remix cover thing they did of Lady Marmalade, you know, which
oh,
was
yeah.
an old who did the original, like the Patti LaBelle, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But the new one was, you know, Christina Aguilera and all those folks. But is there a version of that in this?
Yes, that's that opens the show, actually. It sort of bookends the whole evening, actually.
Oh, awesome. Well, there you go.
Yes, that's still in there. That song rocks. And our four Lady M's, who are, they're sort of like that Christina Aguilera, who was it? Maya, Pink, and Lil' Kim, I think.
It was Christina Aguilera, Lil' Kim, Maya, Missy Elliott, and Pink. That is a lineup.
So we sort of have a similar lineup in our show. And they open and close the evening, and they sing their faces off. Those girls, they're amazing.
I love
that's still there.
I love it. And then, I mean, I have more than enough to work with, and you've been generous with your time. But just one more note, just off the top of my head, about like the overall cultural impact of Moulin Rouge. Like when it came out, I think it premiered at like the Cannes Film Festival and competed for the Palme d'Or, and it was nominated for Best Picture at the Oscar and lost to A Beautiful Mind, which was obviously a great, great Ron Howard movie, maybe a makeup award for Apollo 13 or something. But I mean, it was still a great movie, But when I look back in hindsight, as movie history often does, like Moulin Rouge as a big musical or Lord of the Rings, the first one, as a big fantasy movie, those genres usually don't win Best Picture. It usually goes to the serious drama biopic like A Beautiful Mind. But like, I don't know. I just think of like a Moulin Rouge or Lord of the Rings as like the genre pictures that had a way bigger cultural impact and maybe in hindsight deserve probably to win. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of think about those two movies that you mentioned, Lord of the Rings and Moulin Rouge, like really moving the dial forward just in terms of, you know, what cinema can do, what films and movies can do. But it doesn't necessarily, I guess it doesn't necessarily translate into an award, you know.
Right.
People like to hand out awards based on things that are sometimes just familiar to them. And when something is like, you know, revolutionary and groundbreaking, it's not everyone's going to be behind it.
It's like it's almost a little polarizing because it's so much coming at people in the moment because people don't know what to make of it. But then the real geniuses like the Baz Luhrmanns or whoever you look back on and you're like, wow, they really changed the game. Yeah. And what's funny, actually, now I think about it, this was 2001. And then it almost allowed a musical, Chicago, to win Best Picture the following year. But I almost feel like Moulin Rouge sort of like paved the way and shook up Hollywood enough in 01 that suddenly everyone was like, okay, yeah, let's award Chicago. Oh, and then, you know, and then Dreamgirls comes out and I don't know what else, La La Land and Greatest Showman and all these other musicals we've had since. But like around 2000, 2001, when Moulin Rouge came out, like musicals were, other than Disney movies, musicals were kind of dead. Do you think this sort of, you know, started them back again?
Yeah, I think it was probably hard for people to imagine the movie musical as anything other than like, Oklahoma or like a sort of Busby Berkeley kind of old Hollywood musical where people were, you know, tap dancing down staircases and that kind of stuff.
Right. They gave it to West Side Story and Sound of Music and stuff like that back in the, like the '60s. But yeah, like it was almost associated, like you said, like the golden age of old Technicolor Hollywood. And you know,
we needed someone to show us how it was possible to turn a musical into a Hollywood, you know, hit. And he, I don't know, even when you watch Moulin Rouge, now it isn't exactly a musical,
right?
It's its own thing. I mean Baz Luhrmann had his background in like music videos. I think, you know, he directed quite a few music videos and opera and theater, but there's something iconoclastic about that film. It really does, like I said, move the dial forward in terms of what is possible with cinema.
I'm with you entirely. Yeah, I remember like these almost like, even like the non-musical parts, like the cameras, like almost like digital crane shots moving and flipping upside down across, you know, Paris.
Yeah,
John Leguizamo, and it's wild stuff.
You weren't sure what was real and what was movie magic. It was, you know,
right?
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Absolutely,
it still is. I watched it a few months ago. So.
I haven't watched it in a few years, so it might be worth a revisit. But I would imagine it still holds up because it was so ahead of its time at the time. I feel like our fast paced, you know, instant gratification, YouTube, rapid cutting society. Probably holds up super well if I would guess.
Yeah, we're catching up to it in a way.
I love it. That's true. So many times artists have to catch up with society, but this time the artist was ahead of society and we're catching up now. All right. Well, we've, you know, doted enough on Baz Luhrmann, but tell us before we run a little more about Austin Durant. Tell us about yourself. You know, where'd you grow up? How'd you get bit by this whole performing bug to begin with?
I grew up in York, Pennsylvania, and I started doing theater at a local community theater called York Little Theater, and then another family theater called Dream Rights, which I think is still going strong in York, Pennsylvania. And then I did, you know, the high school musical thing, and that's really where I was like, oh, maybe I could like translate this into a career, and went off to college at Temple University and did my master's at the Yale School of Drama, And I actually don't do that many musicals anymore. I got really interested in Shakespeare and classic theater and the great American plays.
And Shakespearean TV, like Succession.
And yeah, that's right.
You were
Yeah.
in
Which
that.
I can't talk about,
Wait,
but
why can't you talk about it?
because of the strike.
Oh, you're not even allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, I'm not really allowed to talk about I'm not allowed to talk about work that I've done or will do
Oh,
or
wow.
am
Okay.
doing
Well,
because
then.
of the strike. So
Well, I will say you were Dr. Ashbury in a 2018 episode of Succession, and we'll leave it at that. You don't have to say anything. Well,
if you
you know
say
what?
so.
If you say so, you may or may not have been in Succession. Well, what we can talk about, just because you mentioned York, growing up in York, Pennsylvania, let me guess then, because I was in Frederick, Maryland, just so not too far
Okay.
over the border there. But I guess then, did you grow up listening to 98 YCR
Oh
or
yeah, 98 YCR,
Yeah, baby. That's where I learned all, basically heard every song that we're probably talking about right now.
Exactly, yeah.
That's wild. Well, awesome. Well, small world, but we're glad to see you out there rocking it on stage and maybe or may not on screen. No, I'm a SAG-AFTRA member myself, so I'm solidarity, my friend. All right. Well, while all the shows and movies are grinding to a halt, it's the perfect time to come check out theater. So come to Moulin Rouge, the musical at the Kennedy Center now through September 24th. Final seconds, like pretend I'm not here and you're speaking directly to the listeners, you know, like tell them, you know, hey, if you love the movie or not, either way, come on out. You're gonna have a good time.
Right, yeah. If you're a fan of Moulin Rouge, if you've never seen it before, either way, you're gonna have a great night at the theater. If you haven't been to the theater in, you know, the past couple of years because of, I don't know, the pandemic or whatever was keeping you away, come on back and you're gonna have the night of your life at the Moulin Rouge, playing at the Kennedy Center until September 24th.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us. This was a blast.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Later.
All right, take care.